Chapter 12. The carriage has come to take Felicity and Anne to the train station. In the grand marbled foyer, we say our goodbyes while the servants direct the coachman to their trunks. Felicity looks cool and imperious in her mauve coat and fur muff. Anne is giddy and hopeful in some of Felicity's borrowed finery, a royal blue velvet capelet, far too light for the weather, that is secured by the brooch of grapes. "Have you any magic left?" Felicity asks. "No," I say, "it's gone. You?" "The same." Narrowing her eyes, she warns, "Don't you dare go back without us." "For the 100th time, I shan't." The coachman takes the last of their things. "You'd best get on. Don't want to miss your train." It is difficult to talk with all the hustle and bustle, and I hate goodbyes. Anne beams. "Fee loaned me her cape." "Lovely," I say, trying to ignore the use of Felicity's nickname. Felicity has never let me borrow anything, and I can't help feeling a prick of jealousy that the two of them will have the holiday together. Felicity fiddles with Anne's clothing, smoothing out wrinkles. "I shall have Mama take us to her club tomorrow for lunch. It is one of the best women's clubs, you know. We must tell Gemma of our master plan. She'll have to play her part in it." I am already sorry for whatever is to come. "I am taking it upon myself to reinvent Anne for the holidays. No more of this sad mouse of a girl, this scholarship student. She'll fit in as if she's to the manor born. No one will be the wiser." Anne pipes up on cue. "I'm to tell her mother that I am descended from Russian royalty, and that only recently did my great-uncle, the Duke of Chesterfield, find me here at Spence and inform me of my late parents' bequest." Taking in the sight of pudgy, very English-looking Anne, I ask, "Do you think that wise?" "I got the idea from the ruby last night. I thought, what if we were to spin our very own illusion?" Felicity says. "What if we play a little game?" "What if we are found out?" Anne frets. "We won't be," Felicity says. "I shall tell the ladies at the club that before the death of your parents, you received musical training from a world-famous Russian opera singer. They will be thrilled to hear you sing. Knowing how they are, they'll all fight to have you sing at their dances and dinners. You'll be the prize exhibit, and the whole time they'll have no idea you're poor as a church mouse." There is something feral in Felicity's grin. "I shall probably disappoint them," Anne mumbles. "You must stop that this instant," Felicity chides. "I'm not doing all this work on your behalf so that you can go and undo it." "Yes, Felicity," Anne says. Umbrellas opened against the rain, we step outside, where we can have a moment alone. None of us wants to say what we're really feeling, that it shall be torture to wait to enter the realms. Having tasted the magic, I cannot wait to try it again. "Dazzle them," I say to Anne. We embrace lightly, and then the driver is calling over the cascade of rain. 2 days, Felicity says. I nod. 2 days. They skitter off for the carriage, kicking up mud as they do. Mademoiselle Lafarge is seated in the great hall when I enter. She's got on her very best wool suit and is reading Pride and Prejudice. "You look lovely," I say. Très jolie." "Merci beaucoup," she says, smiling. "The inspector is calling for me shortly." "I see you are reading Miss Austen," I say, grateful that she has not upbraided me for my terrible French. "Oh, yes, I do enjoy her books. They're so romantic. It's very clever of her to end always on a happy note, with a betrothal or wedding." A maid knocks. "Mr. Kent to see you, miss." "Ah, thank you." Mademoiselle Lafarge puts away her book. "Well, Miss Doyle, I shall see you in the new year, then. Have a happy Christmas."
"Happy Christmas to you, Mademoiselle Lafarge."
"Oh, and do work on your French over the holiday, Mademoiselle Doyle. It is a season of miracles. Perhaps we shall both be granted one."